Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Richard Osborne and the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. Welcome to episode 13 of the Expert Language Trainer Podcast. I'm back after a long break. Sorry for anybody who was actually expecting me to record an episode every day. I'm going to try to get back to it now because I think I've got a lot of stuff to say, and I wouldn't like to take another 3-week break, but you've got to have a holiday every now and then. And the thing I want to talk about today is, I guess I've learned a lot of things in the 3 weeks that I've been away. And one of the things that's been coming up a lot in conversations with language trainers that I've been talking to all over the world has been this kind of apprehension about certain things that I was offering, certain services that I was offering to them, the ones who actually spoke to me. It was funny that actually a lot of people who I spoke to, they would come back to me after me offering services to them, a lot of English teachers or language teachers saying, thanks a lot, that's really kind. And if I were to push them to say, okay, well, that's nice to thank me, but could you actually tell me a bit more about what you think about the service that I'm offering, or do you have any sort of objections to it that you could share with me that are making you not want to buy the thing that I'm offering you to help me to actually understand what I can do better? And there was nothing coming back. And the two or three occasions where I actually got something back, those were the occasions that were quite recent, and they've taught me a lot about what's going on, I think, in the language teaching world. I've said it from the very beginning, language teaching and the language teaching industry is very different to any other industry out there. And I keep trying to put my finger on it, and I've never given up. I've always been trying to put my finger on what's different. And there's things from the surface when you look at the surface of language training, and you see, okay, it's an industry where there's no barriers to entry. Like I've said before, you can become a language teacher from one day to the next just by telling people that you're a language teacher, and that your language courses could be as simple as just sitting with them and downloading some simple activities from the internet, some role plays and conversation games, and then your job is to sit and to note their mistakes and correct their mistakes. It can be as basic as that to get started. So there are no barriers to entry. There's no qualification needed. There's no technical information needed or skills needed, apart from being able to speak the language quite well to the point where you could tell somebody else if what they said was acceptable or natural or not. And so what was my point? Talking to all these language trainers all over the world, and the few that actually came back to me and told me what their objections were, it really shed a light on what this phenomenon has an effect, what kind of effect it has on language trainers' mentalities and how they feel about what they're doing, and then consequently how they feel about somebody offering them a service like what I'm offering at the moment. This whole idea of getting on social media and establishing yourself on social media, getting a whole bunch of followers and then trying to push them towards some sort of paid language course if you've already got one, or I can help you build one. It was an offer with genuine potential, a sort of obvious potential of, yeah, you can see, I could show you examples of people who are on social media already. And I think it was at that point that I got those few responses from those few trainers I talked to who actually gave me feedback. When I showed them, when I'm talking to them about, okay, you can really get on there, I really promise you can do this, you'll be able to make money doing this, and you'll be an online teacher, you'll have flexible timing in your timetable, whatever. The dream, I'm showing them the dream. It's maybe too difficult to believe, first of all. But then when I show them people who are doing it, I'm like, look at this person who's doing it here. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm sure they have a whole team behind them. I'm like, no, look, it's just one guy sitting, or girl sitting with her phone in her car. And, all the videos she posts are really simple. She doesn't really use that much editing or whatever. And she's just got a link to a paid site. And even, you can show them if you go on Instagram today, just, to do your own research, go on Instagram today. If you're an English teacher, type in #English, and if you're hashtag learn English, and if you're speaking a different language, like if you're a Brazilian person teaching English, or if you're teaching Portuguese or whatever, type in hashtag plus learn plus the language, or hashtag plus, like if it's French, you know, hashtag apprendre français, or, you know, type in the word in that language for learn plus the language of your choice, and just have a look and see if you can find a hashtag that has, you know, a good sort of 100,000 or more followers, or 100,000 or more posts. And you'll find people in there who are very well established. So I found the guy in the Learn English feed who's the most established, who has millions of followers. And you would think this is a guy with, you know, he's got a big agenda, he's got a lot of, I'll put his link, I'll link to his profile under the podcast. He must have like a, you know, whole marketing plan and everything. And he's, you know, obviously really, really professional at this. And it's not to say he's not professional, but what he's doing is not some great marketing strategy. It's not. I've seen ones where people have this very, very elaborate sales pipeline, especially on LinkedIn or on Facebook. People have this very sort of elaborate pipeline between the point of, you know, I've got a video, watch my video, it's free. Do you want to know more? Click here. And then there's like a really long sales page with all the different reasons why you should learn English with this person. And, you know, my course is discounted at the moment, limited time offer. If you're not sure, click here and you'll get a free PDF. And you do that and you put in your email. And then, you know, I get emails from these guys now every day, you know, MailChimp sort of pipeline stuff where it's sending me these beautifully made HTML emails. So like lots of graphics and stuff. That explain more about what they do and keep trying to tell you why you should learn with them and stuff like that. So, you know, that they've got this whole, what we call pipeline worked out. So this whole thing of from step one, customer joins, step two, tempt customer, step three, if customer doesn't join, send email two, step four, if customer still doesn't join, send email five. And, you know, if customer accepts free gift, send email 6B and not 6A, you know, it's that. You get to that level of complexity, which is absolutely legitimate. You know, that can actually obviously make money as well. But you look on Instagram at this guy, can't remember his name, but, you know, again, I'll put him under the podcast, who is recording these videos with his webcam, it looks like, or his phone, just sitting in front of his computer having a chat, explaining some words of the day. This is his thing, is just explaining a phrase of the day, word of the day, something like that. You know, really short videos. And he has a link, and you can follow his link, and you go in, and he has three products. Two of them are about Skype calls. You can book him for Skype calls. And one of them, I can't remember, it's like, you know, 100 most used phrases in English or something like that. And it's like, you know, a couple of euros, a couple of dollars, something like that. But that's it. His website is really simple. And he just has these three products on the website. There's no kind of join my pipeline type thing. It's just, I have 3 million whatever followers. Some of them are going to go through and use, you know, and have a look at the stuff that's on my website. And if they like it, then they pay online and they book me for a Skype session. And the Skype sessions are not even expensive. They were like $20 or $25 an hour or something like that for a private Skype session. So, you know, it's not even that he has no elaborate kind of sales offer. It's not blended. It's not e-learning. It's not, you know, it's just him trying to get more people into his Skype calendar so that he can fill up his Skype calendar with calls, which is great. So, you know, well done for him. He's obviously successful with that because, you know, if you have certain number of millions of followers, for sure, at least sort of 1% of them are going to go and have a look at what your offer is. You know, the industry standard is like 3%. 3% of people will be attracted to go further or to, you know, to have a look sort of spontaneously, because 3% of the people who are following you who want to learn English are people who are actively searching for a way to do it. And so it's not just casual learners who are, you know, consuming on the internet for fun. It's people who genuinely want to learn more English. And so they're going to go and find out what you have. They're going to go look and see what you have to offer. And so it's just to say, you know, the example that this guy is not some sort of professional salesperson. He's not bought some course on Udemy to learn how to sell better online. He's not developed his own e-learning platform or something like that. You know, he's doing something very, very simple. And it's something very successful. So it's not a criticism. It's to show an example of what potential there is out there in the market at the moment for gaining learners online, for actually setting up an offer online, right? So that is to say, to explain all that, to say, when I'm making this offer to English trainers and I'm talking to them about it face-to-face or over email or whatever, and I'm explaining these examples, it's very clear, it's like, you know, smack in the face kind of clear, that what I'm saying is not wrong, that, you know, you see people who are doing it, and I've studied the people who are doing it, I know how to replicate what they do. It's actually not rocket science, but I can replicate what they do, train people how to do it, coach them, give them the right tools that they can use to automate the whole process, so you're not, you know, constantly posting stuff on Instagram all day and it's taking up your entire life, but that you plan stuff in advance and you sort of schedule it with an automated software. I can help people then build the paid part, so build a course that's much more interactive than your standard e-learning stuff. It's not just selling them a book of 100 phrases, but it's actually giving them a proper course to follow where they can interact and they can speak with the trainer and stuff like that. And so, you know, there's this new model that's clearly better than what they're doing. It's what they're doing plus a bit more. So, you know, you get that moment where you're thinking, I would at least like to hear from somebody why they wouldn't want to do that. And so that's why when these emails came back from these three language trainers, and that gave me that insight, I thought, right, I really need to dig deeper into this. And I did. I talked with other trainers about it, and we came down to a word that I think sums it up really well, which is a feeling of legitimacy, to feel legitimate. I think that is now really, I feel like that has cleared up a lot of confusion that I had speaking with language trainers, a lot of the indicators of their personality, of their feeling about what they're doing, about their feeling of about taking paid training courses or even free training courses. It's this feeling of legitimacy, and I really want to get into that in this episode a little bit, and maybe in future episodes, because I feel like what I'm trying to say is these teachers who emailed me, why do I say legitimacy? Because these teachers who emailed me, their first concerns were, first of all, am I going to have the time to follow a training course? So yeah, okay, I can tell them that it's totally flexible. It's, you know, self-study plus me correcting what you're doing, but you know, we don't have any, even the live sessions are recorded, so you can just watch them later and stuff like that. It's actually a good lesson to learn for your learners too. You know, if your learners are telling you, oh, I don't know about English and learning English or learning Portuguese, I think I won't have enough time. You say, well, don't worry, like the whole way I've designed it is, even if you miss the live sessions, I record them so you can watch them in your own time. You know, if I say come on Wednesday at 11 and you have a last minute meeting and you can't come, and it's a group of three people, I'll record with the other two, and you'll have a 1 hour video then you can watch on Thursday when you actually do have time, or you like watch it at home in the evening, or watch it in the train when you're going home. So you can kind of, you can't participate, which is a shame. You have the e-learning stuff to do that. You can participate on the e-learning part, so you can record yourself and whatever on the e-learning part. You're not participating live with the trainer, which is sad. So, you know, obviously learners should still be encouraged to show up to the most live sessions they possibly can, to be able to practice properly. But you know, in the end, like I'm going off on a tangent here, but there's another point, right? Say your learner's like, oh, I really can't show up for these live sessions. They're a bit too, you know, tight for me, or my time zone's not good or whatever. You know, it makes the point for saying, well, you know, you've got three other people in the group that you know now, why don't you guys just meet up and actually practice together? Because you all are doing the same thing. You're all in the same boat. You don't have to be embarrassed because you all know you're learning. Why don't you meet up? You know, I'll set up a Zoom meeting. You guys meet up, record the meeting, and then maybe we can go through it at a later stage or something like that. Or you can keep the recording and just watch it again or whatever. But that you guys can actually be together practicing on your own, and I don't need to be there. You can do it at a time that suits you and not me, because I'm a busy trainer. I don't have the time to, you know, to make time for you guys, but maybe you could actually make time for each other more easily and get that key practice, because they're listening to the recorded live sessions, they're doing the online work where they're actually participating as well and interacting with the trainer online, asynchronously, so not live with the trainer but recording messages, and then that they're maybe organizing group sessions with their colleagues, with their peers, where you're not involved as a trainer, to be able to practice, because that's, you know, something they absolutely need to do. So, you know, if there's a timing issue, then that's solvable. So it's something, you know, for me trying to sort that out with language trainers, there's something to be learned from that for language trainers trying to sort stuff out with their learners to their language learners, right? So just a side example for you. So That was the first concern, was timing, and everybody has that concern right now. And even the people who've paid to take my course, they had that concern about timing. They had that. The first thing they brought up was, "What if I can't show up? I probably won't be able to show up to some of the live sessions. What if I can't show up?" So you know, that was one thing. Then the second thing was, how do I know that I'll really be able to do this? How do I know I'm going to be able to invest enough time? How do I know that I'll be able to find the right niche for what I do? How do I know that, you know, will you actually help me and guide me and coach me in getting this set up and getting it right? Because I'm not convinced that I'm going to get it right. I'm not convinced I can do it. I think my learners are too old. I think, you know, there were all sorts of concerns about, I don't think I can do this. You know, it's a course that's set up and it's promising to help them do it. And they're thinking, I can't do it. And it's you know, there were another teacher who said to me, even if something is paid or free, I wouldn't invest the time in it unless it's something that I'm 100% sure is going to bring value to me. I'm 100% sure it's going to work and it's going to bring value to me. So trainers are looking at these things thinking, you know, my time is actually quite valuable. My time is the thing that I sell at the moment, because I'm not an online trainer, so I'm selling my time hour to hour. That's what I get paid for. So am I going to give you 8 to 10 hours or 11 hours of my life where I could be paid for that time to, or I could be relaxing after a long day of being paid for my time? Am I going to give you that time for free? So it's a funny thing. You know, you're thinking initially, of course, you're thinking about the price, like, oh, is this well priced? And so I tried to price the training quite low for trainers to not have to spend too much. And there is a question of money there, but actually I think the question of money is less important than the question of how much time they have to invest. So there was that question, you know, that's why people wanted to know about it being flexible. That's also why they were like, if I invest this time, am I really going to get a return on my investment? And I'm arguing with them. I'm debating with them about the, you know, how much of an opportunity this actually is. They're telling me they want to be teaching online. They're telling me that they want to have more time free for their family. That's I couldn't empathize more, because that's exactly the reason why I went into teaching other language trainers, is because I saw an opportunity to do something where I could do it online and I could do it whenever, you know, whenever it suits me, and I could spend time with my family. And as we've got two little girls, you know, and I want to have more. I quit my job as a teacher to have a better work-life balance. So I totally understand that issue. They want to have more time, and they see that online learning is the solution. And these are people who are telling me, I know online is the solution. I know teaching online is the solution. Yet I'm promising them that that's what they're going to get. It's very difficult to show somebody with 100% certainty that what I'm going to teach is really going to bring a return, that they're really going to get followers. You're really going to be able to sell some online language training courses to people, because it's something that's a bit hidden in the world. You know, I can look at that guy who's got the most learners, the most followers on Instagram, but I can't show you how many sales he's doing, because I don't know. These kind of people are not sharing that data online or with anybody to say, oh yeah, I made 1 million last month, you know, or I made 100 euros last month. You know, you don't know how many they're selling. You can look at some people who are using Udemy, for example. Udemy is a good website for selling online courses that are completely self-study, which doesn't really, in my opinion, it's not really compatible with language training. But you know, some people are doing it, and there's like tens of thousands of subscribers, which means tens of thousands of sales, essentially. So you know, it is working. There is something that's working there, but it's hard to get the data. So you know, I'm kind of saying to them, well, just follow me. It's 8 weeks. It's 2 or 3 hours a week. Just follow me. And at the end, if you don't get followers, I'll even give you your money back. And it's, so you have all these kind of arguments. You're taking away all of these objections that are related to timing, and they're related to money, and they're related to, you know, how much am I actually going to be supported? And I'm saying, no, I'm talking to you face to face, and I'm telling you, I will be there. Everything you do online, I'll be behind it, and I'll be giving you feedback, and I'll make it as personalized as I can. And so you keep digging, you know, I kept digging and digging and digging until we get to the core, which is this feeling of, you know, am I really worthy of being an online trainer? Are people really going to, you know, is anybody going to take me seriously as an online trainer? And then you hit the kind of rock bottom where you realize, okay, the foundation of all of this, a lot of these objections, is a feeling of not being legitimate. And it comes back to the very beginning, what I was saying at the very beginning of the podcast is there are no barriers to entry to language training. So you can go from one day to the next, becoming a language trainer. But are you going to feel legitimate? Not. You're going to feel like you're trying your best to prove that what you're doing is right, to prove what you're doing is good. So we know that we're really friendly and nice to our trainees, and we're making them feel comfortable and at ease. And, you know, maybe you become a language coach and you're really taking time to figure out what they want to do, what their interests are, what drives them in their life, and try to bring that into language training and all that. But in the end, do you ever really feel legitimate? I wonder even if people, you know, when I did the CELTA, which should make you feel legitimate because you have a qualification, but then you know it's like a 4-week thing and you know you've only got the basics. You get out in the teaching world and you realize, oh my God, I know nothing. I don't have any kind of, you know, I still have to struggle to be able to know that what I'm doing is right. I'm winging it, I think that's the word to use. I'm winging it very often. I know I was winging it a lot the first year when I was a trainer. And at a certain point, you maybe cross this threshold where you start to feel legitimate. I think in Paris, that happened to me because I knew that I was one of the best teachers on my team. So I could tell the learners who were with me and who were also with other trainers were telling me, you know, I like, you know, they would come to me and they would say, it's really nice to have multiple trainers. And I can tell you honestly, you're all very different. I like you because your courses are very structured and I feel like I really learn stuff. I like this other trainer because we might not learn as much, but we have a lot of fun and I feel like I'm really practicing my social English just talking. So there were different reasons, but I knew that people appreciated what I was doing because they felt like it was structured and they felt like I had all the answers to the problems because I'd studied a lot more than was necessary. You know, I'd gone way further than the CELTA, I'd done the Delta, but I'd also studied outside that too. I'd read a lot of books on language, what language is, where it comes from, you know, why we use it the way we do, etc. So, you know, I wrote my own grammar book, for God's sake. Like I have a, you know, you can see it on my LinkedIn profile. There's a sample of it. I wrote up my own grammar book. And this was years ago when I just realized, man, I actually know a lot of stuff about grammar. And I actually know how to teach grammar better than the grammar books that I'm buying. So these sort of so-called industry experts who are putting out these grammar books, and I'm looking at them going, well, that's not 100% right what you said there. There's exceptions to that. There's examples you're not giving. You're not going deep enough. And so I wrote my own book to try to explain, okay, you know, from a teacher's perspective, these are the things you're going to need to know because it's not going to be, you're not going to find it in the grammar books. The grammar books are really technical and really factual, like fact-based. You know, they're trying to frame language in this easy-to-follow framework, easy to teach framework, but it's not actually the nature of language at all. It's not to say that it's completely chaotic, but there, you know, you have to accept a bit of the chaos and be able to explain the chaos a little bit, in my opinion. So all of these things to say, I got to a certain point where I developed my own feeling of legitimacy, where I felt like because I'm better than other people at what I do, I must be legitimate, that I could almost train other people to do what I'm doing and help them feel more legitimate. And that was really the driver for me in 2017 to become self-employed and to stop working teaching English as much and actually really focus more on helping other language trainers. It was that feeling of legitimacy, and I realized actually that it really is quite personal to me, this is the idea of feeling legitimate and not wanting to do teacher training because you feel like, yeah, well, you know, what's it going to bring to me? I'm not really worthy of it. I'm not really legitimate as a language trainer. I don't feel legitimate, or I don't feel 100% legitimate as a language trainer. So, you know, you're pitching this stuff to people who are career language teachers and who are really good at it, and I don't feel like I'm 100% there. I'm still hiding a little bit. I'm still trying to protect myself a little bit. And I think that's the key point. I'm still trying to protect myself a little bit from being called out, somebody calling me out. You might, if I say that, maybe that touches something deep inside you, that feeling of, is one day somebody going to call me out and say, I don't think you're actually a very good language trainer. I don't think you're very professional. I don't think you actually know what you're doing. I don't think you really know these explanations that you're telling me. I think these are just your kind of opinions about language, but do you really know? And like, how much do you actually know about this? And I don't feel like I'm really learning with you, because, you know, we have that fear that somebody's going to call us out for being a bit of a charlatan at the beginning, and even beyond. You know, you can continue being a language trainer with very little outside research and outside study, and continue feeling illegitimate for a long time. So for me, I had that feeling. So that is something for me that, it, you know, it's quite intimate to how I feel about teaching. Also that I was fighting to kind of prove that I was legitimate to other people. So, and that I was looking around at my colleagues and people who I was talking to, who I wanted to help initially, and getting these objections from them, where they felt like they're not, you know. I remember having a meeting with some language trainers in my local town where I live. And these are people who are really like, you know, they've done a bit of traveling and they taught English informally while they were traveling, or they've learned English just, you know, themselves. These were Francophones who had learned English and had got themselves to a bilingual level, and who wanted to be teachers. And it was even more difficult to make them feel like there was some way they could be legitimate, because they weren't just competing against teachers who seemed to be more established and more legitimate. They were competing against native speaking teachers who seemed to be, you know, even a native speaking teacher who's not qualified or certified, they would maybe feel like that's a person with more legitimacy to teach English than them. Yeah, and I know that, because if I tried to teach French to someone, I definitely would not feel as legitimate as a native speaking French person. So there's that barrier as well. So, you know, I was trying to tell them about training that we could get that would be state funded, so it would be free for them, that we could do, that I would be able to execute myself, that would be showing them how to do lesson planning and the very, you know, the basics of teaching that they've missed just by setting themselves up informally as teachers. And even then, that just, it totally scared them off. None of them ever contacted me again. Like, this was an offer of a lifetime, free training. You come in here a couple of hours a week and I'll give you training and I'll help you, I'll coach you. And they could see my resume, they could see, you know, why I was legitimate, but it scared the hell, it, like, scared the crap out of them. And then they went running and they didn't come back. So that's kind of, you know, another example of me, myself, how I've actually had to confront this whole legitimacy problem with people who I want to help, with colleagues, with friends, colleagues in my old job, friends down here where I live. It really is a rampant issue. No wonder, after, you know, the way I said that this legitimacy problem explains in my head a lot of the issues I faced over the years. So over the 2 years I've been trying to connect with freelancers, one of the things I've realized is there's a surprising lack of international networking. And I've talked to people who are like, I want to set up a network, I want to set up a website where all language trainers in the world can come and get training and feel like there's a community who supports them, whatever. And you can see how it works on a local level. You can see these nice, sometimes national, very often more like departmental here in France. I'm trying to think of the word, what it is in English. County in England, you know, that sort of smaller division of a country level. You know, taking Germany as an example. I know there's a teacher network in Berlin and around Berlin. I know there's one in Munich and around Munich. I know there's one in Hamburg and around Hamburg. There is no sort of like national German network, although they are all interconnected and they try to help each other. They do things on a much more local scale. And I kept wondering, like, why is there not? You know, you have IATEFL, which is the International Association for Teaching English as a Foreign Language. You have TESOL, Teaching English as a Second or Other Language, which is like the, you know, we have TESOL France, which is a national network, and that's great. And you go to these events and you actually talk to people and you realize, again, there's either people who feel illegitimate and they're there with a bit of apprehension about being called out. They're there to listen to other people and to try to learn something, to try to get a feeling of how they can become more legitimate from people who they consider legitimate. But then you talk to the people who consider themselves legitimate and there's this intense arrogancy from a lot of them, where you feel like they've become arrogant to deal with this feeling of not being legitimate. Or there's somebody who's like a university professor and so they feel like they have this kind of stamp of legitimacy. But it's just this language training problem. Language training is such a strange, mystical, chaotic thing. We're trying to do it and we think we're doing it the best way we can. No wonder there are so many methods that exist for teaching language. When you look up the number of different, very unique methods for teaching language, things like Suggestopedia and Total Physical Response and the Silent Way, and, you know, all of these really kind of far out. Tomatis was another one I discovered recently, that Tomatis headset thing that, like, you know, reads the vibrations in your skull bones and tries to help you communicate better. That's been transferred over to language training now as well. There's so many, probably because, I mean, I'm just throwing it out there as an opinion, but probably because there's a lack of legitimacy even at the academic level of, yes, I'm an academic teacher of English, I've studied what it is to teach English and how well it works and whatever, that you still can't easily scientifically, empirically study the way that people really learn the skill of language. You can study how people learn vocabulary and memorization techniques and whatever, but how people actually develop the ability to communicate with another human being in a language, I don't think there's a legitimate way to measure that. If there was, there would be a method out there that's saying we're the best method, we're the one to choose, and that would be the one that everybody would follow. We know that the communicative approach works the best because it's kind of logical in a way. Yes, okay, it works really well with learners and they appreciate it and they respond well to it and we see progress, even if we can't empirically measure it. But I mean, if communicating is what we want them to do and we're teaching them through communication, it kind of makes sense. So I don't want to poo-poo the communicative technique as something obvious, but it kind of is something obvious. So there's a lack of legitimacy at every level of our industry, even at the level of the official qualifications like CELTA and DELTA, even at the level of the big publications by big, you know, industry standard authors, even at the level of academia, linguistics, the actual, you know, linguistics, fine, that's a field of study, but, and there are lots of subfields there that are very scientific, but when it comes to the actual ability to communicate with another human being, to exchange in communication socially with another human being, that for me is something that is by nature very difficult to do, to teach with legitimacy. And so, you know, that for me is one of the foundational problems that we then carry with us. It's kind of a virus that infects us and we carry with us throughout everything we do, throughout everything we try to do. And that, yeah, it's infecting even the ability to do anything about it. So, you know, how did I do it? I mean, I got to the point where just by feeling it, I think I've grown up as somebody who in every job that I've ever done, I've felt like I see a way to do this better and I've tried it and I can really believe that I'm doing something better by kind of self-evidence. Like, you know, when I had a job in finance and I had, you know, there was some sort of Excel table that somebody had been using before me, before I came along, and I looked at it and I thought, hold on, there's, like, you know, conditional formatting, we can make this look way better, it would be way easier to read, and, you know, there's formulas we could use here that could give summaries that the person before me never did. And you would ask people, like, why was that not done? Oh, well, because it's just too much work and, you know, whatever, we don't really know and we're not good at Excel. I'm like, well, just, you know, Google it, man, just look it up on Google. And so I did that, find out how to do it, did the Excel table better. People were coming and saying, oh, that's so much better now, that's great, like, thank you so much. I'm like, well, it's kind of like, yeah, but it was obvious the way to do it. So you feel, it is an arrogance in a way. I'm talking about other people being arrogant, and I know that I'm arrogant in the way that I'm solving problems like this. But again, it's it's self-evident to me when something is better. And so I see how to make it better, and I know that I'll be able to tell when it's better. And so then I'm very confident about going through the process of making it better. I'll be able to know at the end if it's better or not. And I still do that today. You know, I've got that platform that I developed, and, you know, I'm going through this process at the moment of trying to make version 3 of the platform. And I'll go down a road of trying to make it better, and I'll get to a certain point and I'll be like, I don't see this actually ending and it being better. Right now it does not look like it's going to be better. I think the way it was, you know, in version 1 was actually better. Maybe I should look at that a bit more. And, you know, I'm very happy to give up a route that I'm taking when I see, when it's self-evident to me that it's not getting better. So all that to say, when I was a language trainer, talking about legitimacy, knowing that I was better for me was self-evident because of the reaction I was getting from learners and because I actually was taking an interest in how to judge their conversational language level. And I was doing a lot of evaluations. I was the top evaluator in my school because I was very good at doing oral evaluations and giving someone a level. because I wasn't just looking at their level as a number, I was looking at their level as abilities. So at a certain point, you realize I'm really good. You realize if I sit in a room with someone in like the first three or four sentences, I know basically kind of where I'm going to put them in what group. And at that point, when you become that good at it, you feel that legitimacy at that level. You say, okay, I really am good at telling what level someone is. And then when you're going into class with people, you're using techniques that you've read in books and you're seeing which ones work and which ones don't. And so you're doubling down on the ones that work. And then you're seeing the reaction from the learners, and you come back the next week and you see, you know, with that inbuilt ability to see what level, conversational level they are, you feel progress with them. You realize, okay, what I'm doing is actually working. So that was, for me, that feeling of legitimacy came from a very personal place, because in my personality, that's the way that I am, that I will be able to be totally convinced by something through self-evidence. So when I judge the way that these learners are speaking better, for me, there's no doubt in my mind it's because of me. And that gives me this huge boost, this great feeling of like pride and also confidence in what I'm doing, and therefore legitimacy in what I'm doing. And it made me feel so legitimate that when I looked around at my colleagues and I saw that what they were doing, and they were scared of people observing their classes, they were scared of me observing, I started offering my colleagues, I started saying, do you know what, I can come and see what you're doing, and I'm totally, you know, non-committal, I'll not be telling the boss what you're doing, you know, like you're a bad teacher or something. I want to come and really just watch what you're doing. You tell me what things you would like to improve in your teaching style, I'll come and watch it, like we did in the Delta. I'll come and watch what you're doing, and at the end we'll have a little half an hour chat, and I'll try to tell you what things I observe, what things I think from sort of books and from methods you could actually use to do better. And there was very, very little response from that. There were a few teachers who really wanted to improve, but most of them were really scared of anybody seeing what they were doing inside the class. The door gets closed, class starts. They don't want anyone to interrupt, because what they're doing in there, they kind of tentatively feel like works, but they don't feel legitimate enough or confident enough to put it out there for somebody else to be able to criticize or to be able to call them out on what they're doing. So I saw this and I thought, I really want to help my colleagues feel like I do. I want to help my colleagues get that legitimate feeling, but they need to go through the process that I went through. They need to do a bit of research. They need to experiment, and they need to feel and actually measure in themselves what's working and what's not. And they weren't really prepared to do that. I don't think they were prepared to confront their legitimacy, because they were so afraid of what it would mean if someone were to rubber stamp and say, you are not legitimate, I confirm. Like, are you going to have to quit your whole job and just flee the country, you know? Like, it was at that level of fear and anxiety of not being legitimate that they wouldn't even let me help them. So, in conclusion, I'm trying to offer this great thing to language trainers at the moment, training, coaching, platform, whatever. And the pushback that I'm getting from me is a lot coming from this lack of feeling legitimate. This fear and this anxiety that comes from a lack of legitimacy, a lack of feeling of legitimacy. And so I really, you know, now that I'm really clear on that, I want to double down on that. I don't know if I'm going to be able to help people, but again, I'm looking at a problem. I'm seeing a way it can be done better. I'm seeing how people are helping teachers who don't feel legitimate. I'm looking at other people who are doing teacher training courses. I'm seeing what they're doing and I'm thinking, you're not really attacking the core of the problem. You're helping them a bit, but I'm not sure it's really getting to the core of why they're feeling bad about what they're doing. So I'm seeing other people, I'm seeing feedback from other language trainer trainings where you're training them how to be whatever, you know, how to be a certain type of trainer. And I'm looking at that like I was looking at that Excel document in my finance job, and I'm thinking, I could do that better. There's definitely lots of things there you could be doing better. I want to do it better. And so, you know, just as an example, there's a guy on Facebook and on Instagram who's doing this exactly the same thing as I'm doing. He's doing this thing about how to be better on social media and how to create stuff that you can sell online and make money selling stuff online, getting more passive income. He's got all these claims about how many thousands of euros you can earn while you sleep and fine. And I'm seeing what he's doing, and he's offering his training for like, whatever, 5,000 euros or something like that. Or, you know, it's on discount for 2,000 something. And I'm offering my quick and easy 8-week course for 50 because I don't care about the money. I want to get paid. But what I want more than anything is to get that feeling of pride and that feeling of legitimacy in helping other trainers feel more legitimate than getting into social media, doing their thing, creating an online course, becoming somebody with passive income who can choose when they want to work and when they don't want to work, when they want to go on holiday or not, not to be working every evening, but to actually work whenever they have free time, whenever they make free time. I know that if I succeed in that, I'm going to get that same feeling I always have done of self-evident, I'm doing it better than other people, my people who I'm training are happier than they would be with somebody else, I've really had an effect on them, I'm doing that well, I'm legitimate, I'm very proud of what I'm doing, I want to have that feeling. So I'm on a warpath and I'm not going to stop until I manage to convince the trainers that I'm working with who I feel like could really benefit from that feeling of feeling more legitimate and actually selling stuff online. I'm not going to rest until I find some way to get them in to with me, get them into class and teach them the things that I think can make them feel more legitimate. So that's what I'm going to try to do to solve this situation, to solve this problem. You know, keep following. I hope I can record more podcasts, maybe give away more nuggets to help people just by listening to the podcast. And I know I'll try to develop other things on the side of that to help as well. Keep following my LinkedIn. That's where I'm the most active and where I'm going to be dropping the most nuggets of truth and helpful things that can maybe help you to get, you know, on the path to feeling more legitimate. But I'm on the warpath now. This is my focus. This is going to be my crusade, right? So keep watching, and I hope I have more information for you coming in the very near future. Thanks. Thanks for checking out this podcast. And if you want to know more, please follow me on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on YouTube. All the links are in the description. I really look forward to seeing you in the next episode.